You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Time to find out why Carlos Correa may indeed be this year's American League MVP. That and many more bold predictions this week from the American League West. Douglas, you know, it's this time of year where we start really thinking about how 2016 is going to stack up. And recently, Fangraphs came out and made their projections for 2016. And lo and behold, they have the Mariners in a tie for first place in the American League West. Nobody's changed more than these Mariners this offseason. Do you see them winning the American League West?
I don't, but they certainly could. I think a lot of people thought they would last year. A lot of people picked them to be in the World Series last year. That didn't quite happen for various reasons, but I think when you look at their roster, you see why people made those predictions last year, and you see why they're predicted to do well this year, and that's you have four really, really good players in Felix Hernandez, Nelson Cruz, Robinson Cano, and Kyle Seager, and then you have Hisashi Iwakuma, who's maybe not quite at the caliber of those other four guys, but has proven to be a very capable pitcher. So right there, you've got five guys that you would say, you know, have a chance to be an all-star every year. And not a lot of teams have that. And when you have three of them stacked together in the middle of the batting order in Cano, Seager, and Cruz, you've got the, you know, what should be the beginnings of a very good offense. So I think, you know, a lot has to happen for this team to get back to where it wants to be. And it's certainly possible.
Are you a fan of what you've seen done, though? I mean, it has been a very aggressive offseason. Jerry DePoto is, I mean, man. it really, from an outside perspective, it has been awesome to watch. Awesome in that regard that I just, it's not often you see teams remade quite as, feverishly.
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. I am a fan of it. I think that they're doing what they need to do to institute a philosophical shift. I think they're moving away from kind of these one tool, you know, like a power heavy philosophy, and thinking more about on base percentage, thinking more about run prevention through defense. I mean, last year one of the biggest failings was they just didn't have enough guys on base. So when you had Cruz having a career year, he just didn't have the guys on base to drive in all the time. And when you factor in Cano had illness to deal with, he wasn't where he normally is over the course of 162 games. Kyle Seager had another solid year, but there were times where he was, you know, maybe in a bit of a cold spell. It just never happened for them. And, you know, one of the other big reasons last year was their bullpen was just terrible. After being so good the year before. Now, we all know that bullpens are highly volatile. They can be great one year and bad the next year. And it's hard to predict sometimes because guys just don't have the sample sizes. They just don't pitch a lot of innings. So they've totally addressed the bullpen. Whether it's going to be a great bullpen, we'll see. I mean, they got Joaquin Benoit. They've gotten Steve Cishek, they've done things to improve their bullpen. Whether or not it happens will remain to be seen, but they're certainly addressing the areas where they feel they have the most needs.
Well, it's got to be better, right? I mean, whether it's great, like you say, is one thing.
It can't be much worse, that's for sure. I mean, they were just, Fernando Rodney could not save a game for a while. He blew a tremendous amount of saves early in the season. That obviously led to him losing his job as a closer and then being shipped out of Seattle. And that's the way it goes when you have a bad bullpen. You know, you guys can leave town real quick. Danny Farquhar never quite happened for them last year. You know, they shipped out some of their couple of their good bullpen arms. They traded Wilhelmsson, who throws hard. They got, you know, it's definitely a different look. And, you know, they had to part with some guys in the offseason that maybe the fans weren't thrilled to see go, but that's the price of poker. And when you're trying to get better and when you have needs to fill, you have to give up something to get something.
All right, Doug. So in the spirit of bold predictions, for 2016. Who might be that guy who emerges this year for the Mariners? Some guy who, you know, obviously we know you mentioned the four big guns, but who's a guy maybe out of the bullpen or off the bench or who becomes maybe a platoon or everyday guy who surprises us this year for the Mariners?
Well, I don't know if people would be surprised. I'm going to go a little bit off of what you're suggesting. I don't think people would be surprised to see Taijuan Walker succeed as the number three or number four starter. I mean, the way that things are shaking up now, you've got Felix at number one, you've got Kuma at number two, you probably got Wade Miley will be your number three, just to go to get a lefty in there. Maybe, who knows? Maybe Miley will even be number two just because they want to go righty lefty righty. But with Walker, I think the thing that would be surprising, maybe not so surprising to the Mariners, but to the big leagues in general, is can he make the jump from a guy that they think is going to be solid to a guy that we see is just extremely special? And because he certainly has the athleticism and the stuff to be an elite pitcher in this league. Now, if it happens next year, wow, that's a game changer for the Mariners. And I think that what people in Seattle would like to see is that Taijuan makes 32 starts and starts to develop some consistency. But he certainly has the ability to take it beyond that. And I think that that would be the surprising thing. If he can suddenly just dominate like a Jacob deGrom or somebody like that, where he just puts all of the tools together, gets with the right pitching coach, and just takes off.
Midpoint in the month of January, just a smidge better than a month ago, till guys start reporting to Arizona. So let's delve in and make some predictions about this year. And so I'll throw a couple of things your way, and we'll see what you think. As an example, last year's team, nobody hit 30 home runs. In 2016, will there be a 30-homer Ranger?
Yeah, I think Prince Fielder will be a little better this year. I think after the comeback year and regaining his swing and regaining his power, I think he's got a chance to take a next step up. So I'll go with Prince Fielder. And my dark horse is Rougned Odor. This guy can really swing the bat, and he might shock you with a 30-homer season.
That probably would be a little surprising. What about Moreland? Could Mitch Moreland get to 30?
Yeah, I think he can, but I think the Rangers would rather him hit less home runs and hit for a higher average, use all the fields.
And, you know, not to move the conversation too far away from predictions, but it seems like the ballpark is playing a little differently in recent years with some of the changes. Do you think that is directly related to those changes and, you know, the wind flow and that sort of thing?
Absolutely. I think when they opened up the back of the home plate stands and put in that big entrance there that allowed the wind to kind of escape out the back door, or actually I guess you'd call it the front door, I think David's definitely a different ballpark. It's definitely not the home run ballpark that we saw, you know, for about 10 years.
Do you like it better this way?
Yeah, oh yeah, it's much better. It's a much more fair ballpark, not the big sluggy matches, a lot more baseball being played than a slow pitch softball game.
Yeah. All right. I agree. On the pitching side, you know, Cole Hamels was such a delight. 7-1 after coming over in the trade and his 12 starts. Is this guy, you know, potential 20 game winner this year?
Oh, I think he's a potential 20 game winner, but that's a much higher standard than it used to be because of the five-man rotations. But I think with the Rangers' bullpen being as good as it is, I think that would really give him a chance to win 20, get 32, 34 starts, and have a bullpen that can hold up a lead. I think he's got a pretty good chance of winning 20 games.
What about Colby Lewis? Will he get 17 wins again this year?
He got a lot of run support last year. I'll say the over under him is 14.
Okay. All right. That's fair. bullpen guy, Sean Tolleson with 35 saves. You know, these things are so dependent on so many outside variables, but Tolleson, a 40-save closer this year?
Could be, but I think with the Rangers bullpen depth being what it is, I think that I think there's a good chance that he'll be at 35, and they'll give more opportunities to guys like Tom Wilhelmson and Sam Dyson, guys like that. So I think they'll loosen his load a little bit and give other guys opportunities.
Yeah, speaking of Sam Dyson, give me a little sense what you think he's capable of doing and how you think they'll use him this year.
I think he'll be their setup guy and their backup closer. You know, he's 98 miles an hour with that hard slider. I don't know if he's ready for a closer role without maybe a strikeout pitch, but he's definitely an overpowering guy overwhelming guy with the sinker. So I think he'll be like an eighth inning guy.
Keona Kela, a big contributor again this year?
Oh yeah, you know, hopefully the elbow will hold up, but with his stuff, this guy's got a very high ceiling, and they got a lot of great arms in that bullpen. This is as deep a bullpen as I've ever seen anywhere, Rangers or otherwise.
Yeah, well, I mean we could play this game all day long, and we'd run out of time talking about all these guys in the pen. So back to the position side of it, and I think one of the great questions, or at least certainly a meaningful question, is going to be in the outfield. Two guys really jump to mind. How much production and how much can Josh Hamilton play? And then does Delino DeShields repeat anywhere near what he did last year? Let's start with Hamilton. I'll put Hamilton at 120 starts, more or less than that, do you figure?
Mm-hmm. I'd like to say more because we all love Josh, but you know, I think it's possible. But if you had to wager, I'd say probably less.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think he's capable of, let's say, 20, 25 home runs?
Oh, definitely. If he's out there, he'll hit the ball out of the ballpark. There's no doubt about that. I mean, if he's healthy, he'll produce. He's got to stay healthy.
Okay, Delino DeShields, last year, you know, nearly a .345 on base percentage. Can he eclipse that this year or meet that again this year?
Yeah, I think he's going to have a better year. I think this is a smart kid, comes from a baseball background, knows how to play the game, knows how to make adjustments, knows how to use his experience. I think he had to adapt to the full-time role, the 162-game season. But yeah, Dave, I think this guy's going to be better this year.
Mark, this week I've decided, since you know it's mid-January basically, let's forget the newsy stuff so much and let's make predictions in as much as we can. FanGraphs is out and they've made their predictions for the year and they've got the Angels slotted for fourth in the West. So bold prediction, I was going to ask you, I was thinking bold prediction, can the Angels win the West? Bold prediction, does Fangraphs have it right? Are the Angels really fourth in the American League West?
Well, I'll tell you what, I've always been a big fan of Fangraphs and a number of different stuff they have. I mean, they've been pretty close to, you know, being right on a number of things. I know last year's win total, they were pretty close to getting right on the nose, too, last year. Now, the one thing that when they're making this assumption right now and coming up with their best case scenario or worst case scenario, whatever it may be, as far as if you're an Angel fan, 81-81 is what they're kind of thinking in terms of, with the Astros winning the division, Seattle coming in second, Texas right behind them, and then the Angels, and then just below the Angels would be the A's. But four teams at least at 500 or better in the AL West, which is a pretty good thing when you think about how good this division has become. And then Oakland just, they predicted not too far below 500 themselves with a couple of the moves that they've made. So, yeah, I mean, is it going to be right? I still think when you make these kind of predictions or projections, there's still a number of moves that still could be made that could change everybody in this point. I mean, they even have the Kansas City Royals, the defending world champs. I think they're below 500 as far as their projections this year. And they kind of rode that thing last year where they, a lot of people said they were going to be the same way last year, and they rode that and kind of a chip on the shoulder to be able to win the World Series. But it'll be interesting. But I think a move or two by the Angels will certainly sway their projections, I would think. But as of now, that's what they think. This team, the way it's set up, and I'm not so sure the way it's set up right now that maybe they're that far off. I think they're off in some ways, but you know, everything's got to go well. I mean, you got to get Albert back healthy. That's an important thing for him as quick as possible. And we know Trouty's going to be unbelievable. Cole Calhoun will be, you know, unbelievable. Simmons will be an unreal with his gloves. So there's some guys that are going to have even better years to, you know, obviously move up on that win total. But as of now, I mean, you can understand why they're thinking that way, because there's a couple positions that are not settled with the Angels. But like I said, that could change quickly with a move or two by Billy Epler.
Let me ask you this. You know, talking about a bold prediction, Pujols 40 homers, 95 RBIs again last year. Is he a 40-homer guy again in 2016?
You know what? He might have been well in the 40s if he didn't. That foot injury last year really took away, because you could see from the beginning part of the year the way he was driving the ball. He didn't, I think it was an unbelievable month in June, where I can't remember the exact number of June and July, where the exact number of home runs and as compared to strikeouts. I mean, it was unbelievable what he did, because he was strong again, lower part of his body, lower half of his body, was driving the ball to right center field, left field. Then all of a sudden towards the end of the season when his foot was hurt, he was back to just trying to throw his hands, trying to pull baseballs, but still 40 home runs in a season is pretty amazing in this day and age where not many players are doing that. So I wouldn't see there be any reason why I wouldn't think he would do that again next year. I mean, he says he feels great. All the indications from everybody I've heard from the Angels organization that he's doing wonderful right now. But and knowing Albert the way he is, he'll be all over social to make sure he's in there playing games in spring training. But I think they're going to be pretty conservative with him and let him to swing the bat, because that's the most important thing. Him swinging the bat, you know, CJ Cron will get the bulk of the playing time at first base, I would assume, you know, during spring training in the beginning part of the year, or even potentially in the first half of the season, whatever it may be, to make sure Albert's swinging the bat.
Yeah, he is. You know, he's really unreal. As I asked that question, I looked up his career stats. That would get him to 600 home runs. he doesn't stop. He's unreal. All right, forget Albert for a moment, because that's never really much of a question, right? Even hurt, he's going to be productive. Left field, I'm seeing a platoon. Daniel Nava, Craig Gentry. Is that where we are on opening day?
Well, I mean, I think if nothing else happens, you know, that'll be the scenario. It certainly gives some speed, you know, especially with Gentry, for Mike Socha to play around with a little bit. But I can't see that being necessarily the case coming in the spring. Both those guys can be very productive as far as, you know, fourth outfielder. Nava can play some first base and, you know, spell some DH too. That you know, you're looking for a deep, you know, everyday lineup, but you're also looking for a deep roster and 25-man roster, and give social flexibility to give some guys some days off. I think we talked about it before, where the guys really, you know, the everyday players play like seem to be every single inning in every game, and they, you know, you get worn out at certain points of the year when you have to play so much, and when you're so, it's just, it's very difficult to give guys days off when you don't feel comfortable with your bench. So I think that's one thing they're addressing. It's definitely going to be deeper. But, you know, you think in terms of what teams right now have a few extra outfielders, you can make a deal, whether it's Colorado right now. Certainly with, you know, Corey Dickerson or Charlie Blackmon, you know, those guys are pretty good players. They're giving that kind of flexibility to, you know, give Mike Socha that option to not only guys get hit, but they can also run the bases pretty well, which is something that, when Socha teams are good, they have good athletes that can run and allow them to do and create different ways of scoring runs. So that's, you know, there's possibilities there. You know, you still have the big names out in free agents. Everyone keeps saying the Angels are not involved. The Angels are not involved, you know, from, you know, Cespedes or Upton. But, you know, maybe those prices fall down a little bit and they become better fits for the club. But I can't see it going into spring training, or certainly into the season, where they're completely comfortable with a platoon situation as is right now.
Brian, news breaking. I don't know if it's breaking news per se. Astros going to play some spring training contests against the Padres in Mexico City. And as long as I have known Jeff Luno, I have known that that has been his goal, and it's finally achieved. How big a deal is this inside that Astros front office?
Well, I think it's a pretty big deal, not only for the Astros, but for Major League Baseball. It'll be the first games in Mexico City since 2004 when Astros and Marlins went down there and played a couple. But yeah, the you know, Jeff Luno, born and raised in Mexico City, of course, so a chance to go down there and with his team as general manager in his hometown. Got to be a really cool deal for him, and his father still lives in Mexico City, so you know, having his father, I'm sure, out at the games would be really a really big moment in his career. But you know, I think also for the Astros to, I don't know who they're going to take with them at this point, but I have to imagine some of their big stars would go down there. Correa and Altuve, I'm sure, have great appeal down there. Maybe Carlos Gomez, so a chance to show off those guys on an international stage, and towards the end of spring training. And yeah, just a really cool deal. Two games against the Padres, calling it the Mexico City Series, and I'm sure baseball would like to do more of this down the road. It's been a long time since they played in Mexico City. We all know Mexico has a big love for baseball, a very successful league down there, and having a couple of the teams in big Latin American markets in the U.S. coming down there is a big deal.
Yeah, and it just seems it's a market that has long, you know, it loved baseball like a lot of markets in that region of the world, and yet we haven't seen a ton of development of major league players. You know, obviously guys like Fernando Valenzuela come to mind, and there are a handful of others, but it's nothing like the Dominican or Cuba or some of those others. I wonder if this might be the beginning of something rather important that way.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, the population of Mexico is so huge, and especially compared to the Dominican or Puerto Rico, and the amount of players they produce in the majors is dwarfed by those countries. And yeah, maybe this will help, you know, foster some baseball down there. You know, maybe in a few years they talk about putting a team in Mexico City or Monterrey. You know, I know there've been loose talk of something like that maybe happening. You know, I think that's still a long shot, but you got to start somewhere. And you know, Mexico City is not a far flight from Houston, so it's not that far-fetched. Hey, if the NFL can talk about putting a team in England, I think Major League Baseball putting a team in Mexico is probably a doable thing, and I don't know if they want to do that down the road, but I think they're expecting sellout crowds at this event in the two games in late March, so that could be a good indicator of what the future might hold.
Very cool stuff. You know, this time of year, it's kind of fun to think about how 2016 will shake out. Obviously, none of the rosters are necessarily set. There's still time for teams to make moves. But FanGraphs has come out. They've made their projections for 2016. They have the Astros and Mariners atop the AL West, both of them 85-win teams. So kind of in the spirit of bold predictions, Brian, do you see the Astros winning the AL West in 2016?
I think it'll be the Astros or the Rangers. You know, I think we learned last year not to sleep on the Rangers. And if you consider all the injuries the Rangers had, and especially in pitching, and all these guys are going to be healthy. They're going to have Cole Hamels for a whole year. Yu Darvish could be back in May. The bullpen, which, you know, they made those deals at the trade deadline. The bullpen got much improved and really was one of their keys down the stretch. They're going to have that bullpen for the whole year. And we all know they can mash a little bit. I just think the Rangers are going to be heard from in the division once again. They are the defending division champs. I think the Astros will be there too. If you look at what the Astros have done, basically they've added Ken Giles and gotten rid of a few spare parts, Chris Carter, Jonathan Villar, and guys like that. You know, maybe they have another move left in them. So they haven't made a ton of wholesale changes, but I think they've gotten better by adding Giles and improving that bullpen. And the Mariners under DePoto the first year, I mean, as soon as he took over as general manager, he's been making deals left and right, and it's going to be look like a completely different roster with the exception of a few of their key pieces back. So I think all three of those teams are going to be in the mix. I wouldn't count out the Angels. I think it's going to be a very, very competitive division, and I think the Astros are going to be right there. And, you know, we still got 5 weeks of spring training, so the Astros could still make a move or two to bolster maybe their rotation or their lineup. I don't think they'll do anything big at this point, but it's going to be a fun division to watch. I think it's going to be a good division, a competitive division.
Yeah, I think Fangraphs is projecting four of the five teams to be 500 or better, which goes to your point. I mean, it is loaded. You know, on an individual basis, last year was such a big year for this franchise. Whether it was, you know, all the awards they picked up, or just some of the individual performances. What about, you know, predicting boldly here, Brian? Something new or different that we didn't see this last year that we might see in 2016?
Yeah, well, get to your first point. I mean, if you look at 2015 for the Astros, they had a Hall of Famer, they had a no-hitter, had a triple play, had a Gold Glove winner, had an All-Star Game starter, Cy Young winner. Go down the list. It was, you know, it was a landmark year for them. But as far as 2016 goes, you know, I think we'll see the awards continue to pile up. And my bold prediction is that I think Carlos Correa will win the American League MVP in 2016. How about that? Over Trout and some other guys. But I just think at 21 years old, I think he's already putting himself in position to be one of the top players in all of baseball. And I think now with that experience under his belt, he's got postseason experience under his belt. He works hard. He wants to be the best. And I think we're still just scratching the surface of what this young man can be. And, you know, maybe that's a little early to put those kind of expectations on him, but it wouldn't surprise me. And if you want a bold prediction, how about that?
Yeah, I would say that qualifies, Ryan. I mean, you know, the American League does boast a handful of pretty spectacular players, but, you know, you've been making that point since he came up, and I don't think he disappointed last year in terms of the offensive numbers. They were as good as anybody on the team. Defensively, he draws raves. I think you might have a pretty good argument there. Do you think the team's performance drives a lot of those things in terms of awards? Could he still win the MVP if, in fact, let's say the team finished middle of the pack in the division?
Probably not. I mean, if you look at MVPs and Cy Youngs, they come from good teams. I mean, that's a trend. It's more often than not. But I think this will be a good team unless, you know, they have some catastrophic injuries or something. And Carlos was their best offensive player last year at 20 years old for most of the season, and he hit third in their lineup. You know, and he's only going to get better. That's the thing. I mean, I think defensively he's got a ways to go, and I think that'll come with being more comfortable as well. I think we'll see him get on base more, hit for higher average, strike out a little bit less. He doesn't lack confidence. He's just a complete package, and he's going to be a good player for a long time. And I'm really excited to see his first full season in the major leagues. Going into his first full season, he's only 21. He's got playoff experience. You know, he's right where he needs to be to take the next step to be a star.
Ken, you know, this week, you know, as we're in mid-January, let's talk about just bigger picture things, maybe even throw some bold predictions out there for this 2016 season. I'll just kind of open the floor for you on the 2016 season. Any particular storyline or a theme that you think might be interesting this year?
Well, and it is just around the corner now, Dave, as we're in the middle of January. In fact, the A's sent me our spring training broadcast schedule today, the official broadcast schedule. So I know that it's looming there on the horizon, and that's an exciting thing. And I know you guys at MLB announced the dates where the pitchers and catchers are reporting, and those are the kind of the signs of spring that I think people, especially in the throes of a long winter, really look forward to hearing about. But as far as the A's are concerned, I think if I was to point to one player who I think could have a real breakout year this year, and I know he hit 32 home runs a few years back and won a Gold Glove, but I think Josh Reddick made a tremendous step forward last year in his career. And as you know, Dave, when your team struggles and loses more than 90 games, it's hard for one player to get a whole lot of recognition. But Josh had, you know, battled injuries the previous 2 years. He was healthy most of last season. He's one of the best defenders. I think he's the best right fielder in the American League. And he did something that is really hard to do for a hitter who's a power hitter, and that is he really cut down on his strikeouts. He made a lot of contact. He used the opposite field, using the whole field, and it was just something that was unsung or under the radar that he had a real quality season for the A's last year, and I think he will take a quantum leap in 2016. I think he'll make the All-Star team, and I think he'll be considered one of the best players in baseball.
Wow. Okay. I mean, he is one of those guys who.
Now that's kind of a bold prediction, right? I mean, that's pretty bold prediction right there for you.
I love it. I agree. Like he's a kind of guy. I think by his style of play that it can kind of capture a person's imagination. What about a number for him? You know, 20 home runs last year, as you mentioned, tough in that lineup, tough in that ballpark. Is he a 30 homer guy?
Well, he hit 32 in his first full year with the A's. I don't know if he can get back to that, but I think maybe not that many people were aware that he even hit 20 last year. So I would say 25 to 28. I think he can hit 285, 290, driving close to 100 runs. You know, obviously, given good health and guys getting on base in front of him, that's always something that you have to consider. But the other thing is like I said, he's just a wonderful defensive player. And it's, you know, guys who can throw, Dave, are kind of a dying breed. I love someone with a great arm. In fact, his arm is so good that they don't run on him that much anymore. So to me, he's more than just, well, let's pick out a number of the number of home runs. He's the sum of his parts, I think, just make up an outstanding ball player.
I'm going to show some ignorance on this one, which is something I do on a regular basis, Ken. But I don't watch him every day like you do. And I don't want to use the word reckless. He played with such aggressiveness several years ago. And it largely maybe why he ended up injured so much the last couple of years. Has that toned down at all? Does he still play, you know, defensively that aggressively? Is that the type of thing they try to control a little bit?
Well, I don't think you can reel that in, Dave. And you're right. I mean, it may be one reason why he got himself hurt. I remember a knee injury that he suffered scaling the wall in right field a couple of years ago. And so he does play with that kind of abandon. And I think that's one of the things that's endeared him to the A's fans over the years. But I do think maybe in terms of, and you're onto something, in terms of him maybe reeling things in, I'm not sure that's the right way to put it, but maybe playing more under control. And the best example of that would be offensively. Because as I said, I mean, he was a guy that struck out 150 times in a season. And last year he was well under 100. And that's a tough thing to do. And so the maturation process of your at-bats becoming under control and thinking about laying off pitches you can't handle and going the other way on the pitches that are on the outside part of the plate. So from that standpoint, I think there has been a lot of maturity in looking at his approach.
Yeah, you know, 65 strikeouts last year. That is remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, I mean, that's putting the ball in play.
Yeah. All right, so what about, you know, you're a broadcaster. You have a great love of broadcasting. This is kind of a weird, I guess, curveball to throw, but any broadcasting themes or bold predictions or anything like that for 2016?
Well, it would be, it's far from a bold prediction, but as you know, Dave, two giants of our business and two men who've had a profound impact on me to the point where it's, I can't even quantify it. Dick Enberg and Vin Scully will at some point this year broadcast their last Major League games. Now, Dick has announced that this will be his last year as the voice of the Padres on television. He's 81. Vinny, and we're all kind of hoping that this is not the case, but he has strongly indicated this will be his last year. He hasn't announced his retirement. And so I would think that as we go down the stretch this season and get into August and September, that there will be an incredible outpouring of love and support and admiration for these two guys. I grew up listening to both of them. I don't know where I would be. I don't think I would be where I've been in my career without the combined influences of Scully and Enberg. And especially looking at just, I was thinking today about Vinny and maybe what it would be like when he winds up doing his final game, what that'll be like and how emotional that'll be, not only for him, but maybe even more so for the people who've listened and watched him all these years, because he literally goes back to the beginnings of the Dodgers in Los Angeles in 1958. And before that, with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1950.